From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for March 13th, 2020. Checking the calendar, there's a lot of stuff that may or may not happen. The Greater Milwaukee Golf Show at State Fair Park might be this weekend. For some big laughs, Kathleen Madigan may or may not be at the Pabst Theater next Friday. And your Milwaukee Bucks had 3 home games scheduled this week, and we know that's not happening. And the Brewers' home opener might happen in 4 weeks, so stay tuned. All right, a Mesa, Arizona man recently celebrated 4 months of sobriety by getting drunk and stealing a motorcycle. Yep, he was too drunk to ride it, so he literally walked away with it until he fell over. He was very easy to catch. Well, a dad was fed up with his 11-year-old son playing Grand Theft Auto all day on his PlayStation, so he bought the 11-year-old a real car. That makes a lot of sense, said no one ever. We know about this because the cops wrote the dad a bunch of tickets. And our headline of the week comes from Florida. This writer might go right into the Headline Writers Hall of Fame. It reads, "Marijuana in bra leads to bigger bust."
Okay, keep going. Yes.
In the studio today, we have Kyle Tedding, Brian Kill, Dave Sandstrom, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up a tough week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Yes, it was a tough week. NASDAQ down 8.2% this week, losing 700 points to close at 78.74. NASDAQ hanging in there year to date, down 12.2. S&P 500 and the broader markets lost 8.9% this week, shedding 263 points, closed at 2709, quite a bit below the 50-day and the 200-day moving averages. Dow Jones Industrial Average shed 2,684 points this week. That's a lot. Losing 10.4%, we closed at the bell this afternoon in New York, with the Dow finishing the week at 23,181. Year-to-date, Dow is down 18.4%. So we had a dead cat bounce on Wednesday, dead cat bounce on Friday. The markets came back. It was to be expected to see a relief rally. My sense, Brian, is that until the head counts for the virus start coming down here in the United States, it'd be difficult to imagine how the markets could form a bottom at this point.
Yeah, you know, and we were even talking before the show, Bob, there's so much information out, and, you know, I guess one of the folks I was listening to in depth last night talked about being in the first inning of this whole coronavirus thing. So there's so much yet to learn and understand and digest. And to the degree that we, I guess, embraced the challenges of the coronavirus this week in such a short period of time, the markets acted about as aggressively as I've seen in my lifetime. You know, we've been through a few corrections together, and they sort of feel the same oftentimes, and they sort of feel a little bit different. But I think in this case, just the sheer, you know, how quickly it happened and how abrupt it was, I think was unique in a way I haven't seen before. So
I've been at this 45 years, and yesterday hit the record books. It was the most money I ever lost in one day in my entire life. So it's kind of breathtaking. You know, Brian, I think it's important to point out that markets form bottoms over a period of time. It's not a 1 hour or a 1 day type of affair. It's always hard to guess, of course, when the selling pressure is over. But we do know that psychologically, the lower the prices go, the more likely you are to sell. Most of us are hardwired professionally to resist selling on the way down. It's a really bad idea for the most part. But as prices stay low, people kind of stew over it, and you know we need to flush that out of the system before we form bottoms. You know, Brian, I've been telling the story all week about how fairly similar this is actually to the fall of 2018. Markets down 19% then. The markets, at least by the Dow, are down 18.4 now. Difference, of course, is that in the fall of 18, it played out over 5 months. This played out over 3 weeks. So very compressed, but you know, you think back to the fall of 18, down 19%, we recovered fairly quickly. So, you know, the people need to put it in comparison, in my opinion. You know, Brian, we get asked all the time, should I sell? And just want to dwell on that one for a minute here. You know, I've never been a fan of selling life savings at a discount. And you got to make sure you don't act like you need all this money tomorrow. You don't. Vast majority of our clients have years and years and years of withdrawals sitting in nice conservative bond funds where we're positive about the stability of the money for the most part to make sure that we can facilitate the withdrawals. But people feel like they need to do something. You know, if you think of the physiology of it all, we have a vagal nerve that is your fight or flight sensor in your body. And when you're faced with danger, your vagal nerve will come into play and, you know, you feel like you have to either fight or run away. And the reality is when the market sells off like this, you don't want to do either one. You just want to sit on your hands and try to just gut it out because this storm will pass, the clouds will part, and the sun will come out again. I think it's important to focus on that.
Yeah, you went deep on me there. That was good. You know, I
only know this from
that was impressive. But, yeah. I my favorite thing when people want to sell is just to ask them right up front when they think they're going to be comfortable getting back in again, because selling's the easy part. And you know, if you have $10 worth of stocks and you're down to $7, you know, if you get back in at $10, you've lost $3 forever, and you've turned that temporary loss into a permanent loss. And I think mentally, when are you going to feel better? Are you going to feel better at $8 or $9, or probably not till the problem that caused you to be concerned in the first place is gone, and then the markets have already recovered, and then it's too late, you know? So I think if you can establish that mindset that it's two transactions, and the reason that people really aren't very good at this is because they can't make those two good decisions because they're scared, you know, that you'll save people a lot of problems.
You know, Brian, I was really encouraged this week to get a sense of call volume here at the firm. And from my personal experience, for every one caller that was thinking about reducing their stock exposure, I had 5 or 6 other callers that wanted to get in. So the vast majority of the calls that I was fielding was, you know, Bob, let's jump into the market here. And the reason why I bring this up is, as I've now mentioned several times, it's really difficult to ascertain bottoms. But my best advice is to look at the amount of money that you want to reengage into stocks and maybe divide it into 3 parts. You know, spend a part now, spend a part maybe a month from now, and then wait on the third part until we get some acceleration in equity prices. I mean, we all know this will pass. We all know that, the average bear market is over in 23 months. And assuming this one's anywhere near average, you know, we know that the bottom formation will take about 2 or 3 months, give or take. And I think that coincides with when we'll get a handle on declining headcounts. We know from the experience in China that took roughly 2.5 months for their headcounts to go down. If we date the virus here in America at the beginning of March, it tells me that somewhere in mid-May, headcounts should start going down in the United States. Now, clearly I'm not an infectious disease expert or specialist, but just ballparking this as a money manager, it seems to me that we'll start to see the light at the end of the tunnel late in the springtime. And I'd want to save maybe my last third of the new money that I want to go back into stocks with for that period of time. So I have always been fond of buying low. And for some clients, maybe they don't want the extra risk or aggravation right now. But I think for some others, you want to maybe nibble at the edges here because I think there are clearly some better opportunities than there were a month ago.
You know, Bob, maybe some of the best advice I'm hearing right now is just don't be a hero, right? You don't have to rush to get back into the market if you've already gotten out. If you think that maybe you had a little extra cash on the sidelines, there's going to be plenty of chances along the way. There's a lot of uncertainty out there right now. There's a lot of reasons to think, yeah, things could continue to trade the way they have for a while. Volatility is not going to turn around tomorrow. And so, you know, as you say, maybe break it up into a couple of different chunks. But I think that advice extends beyond just, you know, how do you take the steps to, you know, move back into the market, but also what are you doing with what you currently have? And all that gets back to having a plan when we entered this and understanding that if you're relying on that plan, You know, we can't make any promises about the direction of the market today, tomorrow, a week from now, a year from now, but we know that historically the plan that we've put in place for the vast majority of our clients, the vast majority of investors, is a plan that works, is a plan that long-term gives them the confidence they need to stick to it. You know, I think that's some comfort that, you know, you don't have to go out there and be right on everything right now, that you don't have to be a hero and try to decide what's the right time to get back in, but you can fall back on that plan that you built a long time ago and not have to change now. If you are going to change, wait until things clear up a little bit, understand what it is you're changing and why you're changing it rather than just simply reacting.
And I know, Kyle, you bring up a real good point about balance. And I think, you know, it's amazing to see how the human psychology changes over time. When you get into a situation like we've had an 11-year bull market, people have a tendency to become a little more immune to risk along that way because everything's going so well. And they start to question those fixed income and safety positions in their portfolio over time because they're watching their stock portfolio do so well, and it's kind of like, why do I have these other assets that seem to be holding me back a little bit? And it's amazing how you get into a situation like we've seen over the last 2 weeks, and it abruptly snaps people back to that understanding of why you own those bonds in the portfolio and how well they have held up during this very difficult time. And back to Bob's point, how they realize now that how important those multiple years of liquidity are in their life right now.
You know, Dave, I read from two different sources this week the adjustments because of the virus with GDP projections for the year. And it's pretty interesting with the markets now down, at least by the Dow anyway, 18% for the year, that GDP only has gone down the projections from 1.7 to 1.2. Hardly cataclysmic. I mean, they think the global economy is going to barely experience growth. But overall, you know, GDP just went down a tad. So it's interesting to see how the markets reacted to the virus. And frankly, I think it has reacted the way it should have reacted because nobody knows for sure what the virus is really going to do to folks here in the United States. So the market really errs on the side of caution. But the stock market is a pretty good forecaster, pretty accurate over time. So the market's clearly telling all of us that this does have the possibility to be the real deal and could take quite a bit of time to dig out from underneath. But the good news is we know that the virus will eventually play its course and they'll come up with a vaccine at some point next year. And it'll all be in a distant memory, hopefully in a couple of years from now.
Bob, I think that's a really good point. And as far as the economy is concerned, I think a lot of people are still looking at, I mean, of course it is early and we don't know for sure, but that this is a short-term sort of a thing. That, you know, even the Fed when it released, when it lowered interest rates last week, as it did so, it said this economy is still fundamentally strong. So you've got that underlying, you know, whatever is going to happen with the coronavirus, you still have those fundamentals that at least started out pretty well.
You know, I think there's another point to be made, too. We've been talking for a while, months, if not even the better part of a year or more, about the potential for heightened risks and, you know, the diminishing opportunity set. And certainly I'm not beginning to suggest that we would have predicted that things would have come about the way they have. But we have talked a lot about taking risk out of your portfolio. And I think there's a difference between seeing conditions and acting in a proactive way to manage risk and then between predicting that certain events happen. So, yeah, I don't know this week was going to be this week, but I do think we've been taking, you know, risk by selling some stocks out of many portfolios for a long time, and because the conditions warranted that. And I think now circumstances change, and as conditions warrant other changes, we'll have the opportunity to do that. If that means buying in a little bit more because people were on the more conservative side, then you get a little bit of protection on the way out and a little bit of maybe making a little bit of money on the way in, you know?
Joel, I'm interested in your comments. You work for the journals and the Journal Sentinel for decades. I read the paper the other day that during the Spanish influenza in Milwaukee, they closed the schools and the churches, but not the taverns. I'm wondering, you know, what your spin on that is. Maybe it was against the law to close the taverns or something back then.
It was probably against the popular judgment.
Well, but, they thought they'd throw the mayor out.
It was interesting because Milwaukee had a very low incidence of death from the Spanish flu.
Well, there you go.
and part of that was just, I mean, it was largely a city of German immigrants, and you just sort of said, do this, and they followed. But it was interesting with the tavern thing because they did keep the taverns open. The churches weren't happy about that. But what they said about the taverns was, you can stop at the tavern, have your drink, but just drink up fast and go home. Don't linger. Keep your social distance.
It's probably the priest in the bar, right? I
mean, 2 o'clock appointment told me that he went to the store, wound up getting a bottle of whiskey because it was a fraction of the price of the equivalent amount of hand sanitizer. Yeah. And he was convinced that he did the right thing as a way to keep his family safe. Folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the program. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.